2 Samuel chapter 13. I'm going to talk about subliminal temptation, and you might think, what on earth, subliminal temptation? Well, it's all around you. All around you, temptation on the subliminal level. That is, that certain things which may be innocent in themselves suggest things to you and make wrong ideas and immoral thoughts and desires pop up in your mind, and possible things you could do pop up in your mind. I'll give you the example that I often give in these little chats. There I am doing my shopping here in Riga, where I work with a lot of recovering alcoholics. And there I am in the big supermarket, and there's a huge alcohol section, and I see from a distance someone that I've worked with against their alcohol problems wandering around it. And I go over there and I say, hey, what are you doing in here? Oh, Duncan, I quit drinking. I'm dry. Don't think that I'm buying any booze. No, I didn't say you were. I asked, what exactly are you doing here? Oh, he said, I'm just seeing, you know, how much vodka costs these days. You know, funny how the prices have gone up quite a bit since, you know, when I used to be buying vodka. Get out of here. Get out of here, my friend. Just get out of this section. Why? Because it's all subliminal temptation. Is he committing a sin? No, he's not. There's no sin to walk around the alcohol section in the supermarket. But it is unwise because you are getting images in your mind. There's someone there looking like they're having a great time with their girlfriend, drinking such and such vodka or whatever. So here in 2 Samuel 13, this Jonadab guy is absolutely set up as the parade example of a source of subliminal temptation. He's described in verse 3 as subtle. Well, that's the language of the serpent. So Jonadab gets involved in this business of Amnon, who is desperately in love with his half-sister Tamar. He's obsessively in love with her. And I think this reflects perhaps the obsessive nature of David's passion for Bathsheba. And Jonadab says to him, well, lie down on your bed. Bed, of course, has connections with sex. That's typically where you have sex. Lie down on your bed. Pretend to be sick. When your father comes to see you, tell him, please let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat and dress the food in my sight that I may see it and eat it from her hand. He doesn't say, you want to have sex with Amnon, you want to have sex with Tamar, your half-sister? Well, just get her to come in your bedroom when no one's around and rape her. I mean, why not? He doesn't say that. He just says, lie down on your bed and ask for Tamar to come and bring you food to eat. He doesn't actually make specifically the dots to join together and say, look, this is what you could do to her. He just puts up the situation. It's like the snake in the Garden of Eden, the serpent. Did God really say you can't eat of that? He knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will discern good and evil. He raises questions. That was all subliminal temptation. This is how advertising works. The image of this fantastic life you can have if you buy this particular car that is called Freeway or Freelander or something like that. And there you are with the sunset, and you can be driving out into the sunset with not a care in the world if you buy that car. And this is the stuff of human nature, I'm afraid. Now, it all gets more complex with Amnon because he says in verse 9, when she does come in, he says, have all men leave me. And every man went out from him. He's quoting word for word the words of Joseph in Genesis 45, verse 1, also in the context of food, where also he says, every man leave me, and everybody went out, whilst he makes himself known to his brethren. So Amnon's not a spiritual person, but he grabs hold of a Bible precedent, as he likes to see it, a few Bible words, and thinks that that's good. And then he says to her, come lie with me, my sister, verse 11. They're the very words of Potiphar's wife to Joseph. Well, he forces her and lays with her, and then she tears up her garment of many colours. This is again Joseph illusion. It's all jumbled up, isn't it? And yet you wonder why all these jumbled up, out of context allusions to the Joseph story. Well, because this reflects what was going on in his jumbled mind. Grabbing a bit of out of context biblical allusion and saying, and that thereby justifies me. And anyone who's been in any church for any period of time or ecclesia will have seen that sort of thing go on. Bible verses quoted or fragments thereof, way out of context to describe or to justify what is clearly wrong. So he throws her out of the house, has the door bolted behind her, like she's some crazy, sexually obsessed woman who's just trying to rape him. As if this is a case of male rape. In other words, he is blaming the victim. He is transferring all his guilt onto her. Now, you go on with this subliminal stuff. Verse 20, Absalom, her brother, says to Tamar, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? Well, been with you? Yeah, sure. They were half siblings, half brother, half sister. And again, it's all subliminal. And Absalom says, don't worry about it. Don't take this thing to heart. Well, of course she's going to take it to heart. But what he means is, I will sort this out. I will get revenge. I will kill him because of what he did to you. So take comfort because he's going to be a dead man. Now, doesn't say that. Now, Jonadab isn't specifically stated as having given the idea of this murder to Absalom, but given his previous behaviour to Amnon, you wonder whether he also didn't have a hand in this. As if he didn't say, well, why didn't you just invite all the king's children, including Amnon, of course, to a feast on your property so you can all get drunk together? That was the subliminal way of suggesting, and you can then murder Amnon there, way far away from the court scene in Jerusalem. And that's what he does. He gets Amnon drunk and gets him killed, rather like David made Uriah drunk and sends him off to be killed. So all these aspects of David's sin now get reflected in the behaviour of his children. But my point is, it's all the stuff of subliminal temptation. That is what surrounds us. And you've got to keep an even keel here. And I think this is where the state of our heart, the state of the mind, is so absolutely critically important. This is why we need God's Spirit in our spirit. I'm not talking, when I talk about the Holy Spirit, of miracles and all that sort of stuff, which is all over and done. I'm talking about the love of God being shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit, which is given unto us, Romans 5:5. I'm talking about Ephesians 3. The might of his Spirit in the inner man. That's what I'm talking about. The comforter, the power, the psychological power to have the presence of Jesus, to know the mind of Christ. That's what I'm talking about. That is what we so desperately need. The new psychology, the new pair of eyes, the new worldview, call it what you will, so that we don't fall for all these subliminal suggestions that are all around us, jumping out at us from screens, in the coded words of people with whom we meet, like Jonadab. All around us, we got this stuff. And if you don't have the other pair of eyes, and if you don't have the other worldview and the other spirit, you're going to fall for it.